Blog Talk Radio.
Are you tired of being sheep? Well, so is he. Get a friend, get informed, and get involved. It's We're Not Cattle Radio.
That's it. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to We Are Not Cattle Radio. I'm your host, Jake Counts, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, and it is Tuesday, November 5th, 2013, and I will be live here for the next hour. And then after that, be sure to join me and a couple of my friends that you've heard on the broadcast before. On libertymovementradio.com, that is libertymovementradio.com. We are running a money bomb over there tonight as a one-year anniversary of the station. They actually syndicate my show on Wednesdays, and I believe they carry it live on Thursday night. So big shouts out to all my friends over there. You guys do great work when we can all keep it together in this crazy world that we live in. So that being said, I did want to start off the show with something a little different, because when I wrote the show notes for tonight and when I wrote the topic for the show, I wanted it to be about solidarity between all different factions of humans that inhabit the United States, and we like to align ourselves with little tribal groups called political alignments. So I wanted to cut through the BS tonight, whether you're a liberal, libertarian, Democrat, Republican, whatever jersey you typically tote out when you walk out into the world. Let's put those jerseys on the shelf for this evening. And let's really focus on things that I believe we can all agree on. Now, the resolutions to all these things that we can agree on are different. And that's where the infighting comes in. But what I want you to get out of the show, moving forward, this is a new train of thought for myself. I do have conservative ideological views, but that's just myself. So I want to open it up to a broader audience and believe that we could all come together on some just concrete, simplistic things. So before I get into the political diatribe, this is a clip from Neil deGrasse Tyson, whom, if you guys have never seen any of his work, he's been on Nova. This was actually a lecture he was giving. And this really does snap it into perspective. For all the political infighting, for all demonization campaigns, for all the mainstream media using the divide and conquer methodology, and then the lemmings going out and repeating the regurgitating the rhetoric, we have to break through that. We have to start, and I'm educating myself and anybody that listens to the show, if you start from the very beginning and listen to it currently, it's very, very different. I guess that's why my audience has fluctuated so much. I had a peak where I was doing very, very well, and then I went on a downslide when I got into some of my philosophical ideological beliefs instead of staying true to the message. And the message is that we are all human beings. We are not cattle. We are not sheep. We are not wage slaves. This is not what we are put on this planet to do. And we are also not put on this planet to interact hatefully with one another. Now, I'm reading some books that really do challenge my philosophical ideology of our human beings. Born innately good, or are we born innately evil? Is it a learning process? Are we blank slates? What are we? Well, that's an argument for a different day. So let's let Neil deGrasse Tyson really bring us in to a cohesion where I think we can all gravitate towards and really understand one another, even if we don't agree with the philosophies of the other parties or the other people. We need to respect them. Respect the differences. And here's a novel concept. If you can't defend your political ideology, with grammar, logic, and rhetoric, and taking out the spin from the media or newspapers that you've read. Remember, going around and reciting talking points to people does not make you an intellectual. It makes you a repeater. And the real debates that need to go on in this country, and the tough debates that need to go on in this country, and then from our country moving out towards the rest of the world, because I don't want to say that we are the center of the universe by any means, but the world really does look to the United States as a beacon of hope and what you can really do when you have absolute freedom. Well, what we have decided to do with it is to try to go around and spread democracy through bombing and overthrows and putting in dictators, removing them, you know, 30 years later. So the policies are flawed. But why is that so? I believe it's because of the information not getting to the public and the correct information not through the filter that you want. You see, before I get into the political stuff, let me let Neil deGrasse Tyson lay it out for you. And then I'll get into the political stuff. Thanks for joining me, everybody. It is the People's Show. It is live every Tuesday and Thursday night from 9 until 10 p.m. I might be expanding it here soon, but then again, I have a baby on the way, so I might be shrinking the show. Who knows? Also, did finish up some side issue. A lot of people have been asking me about the New World Order for Dummies. That will be airing here pretty soon. Josh and I did some brainstorming earlier this afternoon, and we should be able to get the first tracks, I believe, laid down sometime soon once we get all the editations done. Once again, me making up words. Once we get all the editing done, then we should be able to launch the New World Order for Dummies. And it is going to be a glancing blow, everybody. So it's not going to be an in-depth, detailed diagnosis of the challenges that we face against the global technocracy and the global transhumanist elite. It will be a once-over, but then also giving you leverage and guides to go a little bit further. If you want to, if you're inquisitive about what we talked about, we're going to give you hyperlinks on documents. The publications that are readily available, we'll put those all in one place so that you can take the time from, you know, and by using the Trivium and learning how to teach yourself new philosophies, we'll all grow together as human beings. So here is Neil deGrasse Tyson to kick us off here. So enjoy, everyone.
All right, just a couple of thoughts. One that's sort of deeply cosmic and another one that is fascinatingly disturbing, I think. You'll be the judge of this. Consider a couple of fundamental facts that has been gleaned in the past 60 years. That the ingredients, if you had asked your chemistry teacher 50 years ago, once you looked at that mysterious chart of boxes that sat in front of your class, the periodic table of elements, where did those elements come from? The chemistry teacher would actually not have an answer for you. They'll say, well, you dig them out of the earth. That's not where they come from. It took modern astrophysics to determine the origin of the chemical elements. We observe stars, we know what goes on in their center, they explode, laying bare their contents, and what we have discovered is that the elements of the periodic table, that which we are made of, derive from the actions of stars that have manufactured the elements, exploded, scattered their enriched guts across the galaxy, contaminating or enriching gas clouds that then form a next generation of stars populated by planets and possibly life. And so when you look at the ingredients of the universe, the number one ingredient is hydrogen. Next is helium. Next is carbon. Hydrogen, helium, oxygen, carbon, nitrogen. Those are the top ingredients in the universe. Now you say, well, okay, that's kind of cool. Well, and you look at Earth, because we like thinking of ourselves as special, we say, oh, we're special. Well, what are we made of? Well, what's the number one sort of molecule in the body? It's water. It's water. Well, what's water made of? H2O. Hydrogen and oxygen. Hydrogen and oxygen. In fact, if you rank the elements in the human body, with the exception of helium, which is chemically inert, useless to you for any reason other than just to inhale it and sound like Mickey Mouse, You can't die from helium unless that's all you breathe. Number one in the human body is hydrogen. Matches the universe. Number two is oxygen. Matches the universe. Number three, carbon. Matches the universe. Number four, nitrogen. Matches the universe. And for each of us, the fifth element, other, is the same in both places. Okay? Other. So, we learned in the last 50 years that, of course, not only do we exist in this universe, it is the universe itself that exists within us. And had we been made of some rare isotope of bismuth, you would have arguments, hey, we're something special. But there are people who are upset by that fact, saying, well, that, would that mean we're not special? Well, I think it's special in another kind of way. Because when you look up at the night sky, it's no longer we're here and that's there. It's that we are part of that. And that association, for me, is actually quite enlightening and ennobling and enriching. In fact, it's almost spiritual, looking up at the night sky and finding a sense of belonging, given what we've learned about the night sky. And so now we have ourselves. Now, are we alone in the universe? We're made of the most common ingredients there are. And our chemistry is based on carbon. Carbon is the most chemically active ingredient in the entire periodic table. If you were to find a chemistry on which to base something really complex called life, you would base it on carbon. Carbon is like the fourth most abundant ingredient in the universe. Isn't that rare? You can make more molecules out of carbon than you can all other kinds of molecules combined. So, if we ask ourselves, are we alone in the universe, it would be, in spite of my diatribe about UFOs, I tell you in the same breath that it would be inexcusably egocentric to suggest that we are alone in the cosmos. The chemistry is too rich to declare that. The universe, too vast. There are more stars in the universe than grains of sand in all the beaches of the world. There are more stars in the universe than all the sounds and words ever uttered by all humans who have ever lived. To say we're alone in the universe. No, we haven't found life outside of Earth yet. We're looking. Haven't looked very far yet. Galaxies this big, we looked about that far. But we're looking. And how about life on Earth? How is it hard to form? Just because we don't know how to do it in the lab doesn't mean nature had problems. So it may be, given that information, that given the right ingredients, which are everywhere, life may be inevitable, an inevitable consequence of complex chemistry.
There we go. So that's a thought before we get the podcast rolling. The thought is, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, who knows, Communist, Marxist, Leninist, it really doesn't matter. I think we can all agree on fundamental human law, what used to be called the law of nature, and that is that we all need to strive to be better human beings. And the one way that we do this is by respecting each other and listening to other people's opinions. Not listening to pause to think about what you're going to say, but actually listening. Taking in the information that is being given to you by somebody else, interpreting that through grammar, logic, and rhetoric, finding out what the source is, where are they coming from, what is their personal belief, why do they believe that, and then ask them. And I think what you will find is that even though we like to put all these labels on ourselves and tout around and talk about and run in our little cliques of who we are and what we really stand for, there is a general consensus among people. Number one, people don't like to be told what to do and they don't like to be enslaved. Now that entire process has been turned on its head through your education system, but that's a story for another day. Now we have to aspire to be better people. And challenges of life, which we face on a day-to-day basis, on your personal level, whether it's just you waking up in the morning on time, or whether it's you doing the dishes the right way before you go to sleep, or anything, whether it's, you know, making it to a child's softball practice, we all have challenges. But the thing that the modern world has done is it's taken all of our challenges, made them, number one, very easy to dismiss, and number two, made it very difficult to interact with one another. As you see the brainwashing, and I hate to use that term, but there really is no other term for it, the ideological mist that has been sprayed among the masses here in America is not reality. And unfortunately, there are some that live in the mist and they will never come out of the mist. And those people, you can't reach. They have determined that their reality supersedes actual physical reality. Their matrix-level ideology really does supersede anything that you could put in front of them. It doesn't matter how many books you show them, how many video clips. The stubbornness of the human ego can only take so much. And it doesn't matter how many pieces of paper you have from a Carnegie-sponsored or Ford Foundation-sponsored university. You can maneuver within the psyche of the masses quite well, and you will think that you are very, quote-unquote, sophisticated. And if you really want to understand what I meant by quote-unquote, you should really look up the definition of the word sophisticated. It is actually lying to yourself, believing that you are in a different reality than you actually exist. So I guess the overwhelming theme of what I'm trying to get at here before I get into news and things that have caught my eye over the last couple of days is that if we can put away our tribal instincts to group up, to be a part of a group, to be a part of a quote-unquote political party, and just get back to being human and asking the real question, does this make sense? Because now what we have is both sides of the political spectrum, neither one of them making sense. And it doesn't make sense on purpose. When I watched the president speak and when I watched John Carney speak today regarding the president's promise that if you have your plan, you can keep it, that he said over 26 times, and then says, well, I didn't really mean that you could keep it. I just meant you could keep it. You see voice inflection, all of these things. But the way that they shifted idioms throughout their speech, the way that they redirected your subconscious and used verbiage that didn't make sense, so it scrambles your thought process and your ability to siphon out what is real, what is not real. That's what we're trying to get across here. What we saw today was an incredible, I guess, accomplishment in social media, where we had thousands of people all over the world coming together to protest government corruption. Well, here's the big challenge. A lot of people in a lot of positions understand that there are some battles to be fought, but they're too tired, they're too afraid, or they just don't, quote-unquote, have the time to fight them. And that's where we come in, the activists, the people that really do want change, that want to incite change, that don't want to just go with the status quo, that will challenge it, will push back on the system, will say that, no, droning people in order to get one bad guy is not just quote unquote policy. It's absolute war crime. There's a huge difference. And I know that if you're listening to this and you're an establishment person and you think, well, we're keeping Americans safe. Let me ask you the question. If China sent drones over here once a week and blew up a couple of buildings in your city because it wasn't, you know, endangering the Chinese pilots, would you still have the same philosophy? And the answer to that question is a glaring no. But you have been conditioned after World War II, when the war machine really did start to take hold, through the IG Farben, the delusion of that, through the Bushes and all of their money-making schemes and their pushing of the military-industrial complex with all of their investments and war and oil and all of these different facets that they had their hands on. You were conditioned to accept this. You're conditioned to accept that it just is what it is. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is called the status quo. And I sit here as a free-thinking individual that has broken through the mind control, that has broken through the fog. I've turned my proverbial fan on. We can all just imagine that we have, as dumb as it may sound, those little headlamps with a little fan on them. And it's your choice. Do you choose to turn the fan on and see through the fog? And everywhere that you go, that the fog just fades away and fades away, and you see it for what it is. Mass propagandized mind control by corporate interests in order to condition you to be a wage slave or a consumer, however you want to look at it. That's what you're conditioned to do. Remember after 9/11, there was a big push. Don't everybody freak out. Get out there, support the economy, support the economy, support the economy. I don't know how many times you guys heard that, but if you were paying attention, you heard it almost every day. Kind of like weapons of mass destruction. You see, the people who are in charge and who have been there for a very long time and have positions of power in high-ranking groups and cabals, like the Bilderberg Group and the Council on Foreign Relations, which from what I hear is kind of a stagnant entity now, but these people really do understand human psyche and how to deflect your vision to be a free, aspiring human being that has a life, a family, that has children and grandchildren and has a savings. Here's a really good question for you Democrats out there. How many times have you heard your president say, try to save some money? They're never going to tell you to save. You are a bona fide consumer, born out of an educational system which has taught you how to consume and do what you're told. So what happens when people push back on the system? Well, they're labeled terrorists or you're labeled a conspiracy theorist if you don't buy the quote-unquote propagandized line. So it really does become something of anathema of being a free individual. So I say put your tribal swords down. Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, communist, whatever. We have real issues here. We have real issues on an economic scale that the media won't tell you about. We have real issues when it comes to our foreign policy that the media won't touch either. We have extreme issues when it comes to the environment. Nobody tout global warming at me because I will hang up on you on the air. It is ridiculous. If you understood who owned all the carbon trading systems, and they've made it up as this big scam to make money. Gee, I've never heard of a company doing that. Maybe Enron never did that. Maybe that's not why they went bankrupt. Don't get fooled again. Just like the WHO says, don't get fooled again. But we do have real environmental issues. Deforestation is a real environmental issue. That stupid plastic island that floats off the coast of California, That's a real issue. The fact that we even use oil a lot now is a real environmental issue. What are we doing? But no, I know it's fun to play political football. I know it's fun to go and say, well, the Democrats, if we just had a Republican in there, you already lost the battle. The battle goes on between your ears. And you have to realize that. It's a battle for your psyche. Whether you believe humans have a soul or not is irrelevant. Bertrand Russell can kiss my ass. Those people that believe that we're a blank slate and we can be conditioned to do whatever they want us to do, they can all kiss my ass. You are a free, beautiful individual, and you have thoughts, and you have feelings, and they are not discerned to you by any stupid television or some radio show that you listen to or even a book you read. It comes from a culmination of your subconscious that breeds into one living organism that is a collection of microorganisms that formulates a thought. Try it tomorrow. Try it tonight before you go to bed. Don't think about what you've heard. Think about what Neil deGrasse Tyson said. Think about the vastness of the universe and how amazing it is. And we're on this rock spinning in the middle of space, and we haven't all gotten together and gone, hey, what the, you know, what's out there? Let's go find out what's out there. That looks pretty cool. No, I gotta be a Democrat. I gotta worry about everybody else. No, I gotta be a Republican. I gotta worry about big business. It's all nonsense. It's all a bunch of nonsense. Yes, they're big issues. But unification of the human species and getting past all these stupid, petty issues. I mean, think about what you're arguing over. You're arguing over ones and zeros that don't even exist? That's not tangible? Are you serious? That's what we argue over? We're arguing over how to take care of the rest of the human population when it's so obvious? When it's so obvious, if you take away the 0.00001% and their kleptocratic, you know, rigging of the system, if you take that away, then we all live in abundance? I mean, can we all just agree on that? And then, of course, you will have somebody that says, well, they've earned that money. Actually, probably they stole it. Is that earning it in your book? Or is that stealing? Is that theft? Is that robbery? Do they deserve to be hung? What is it? You tell me. So that's it for my diatribe, everybody. Now I'm going to get into some news. I think I got my friend here that's going to be calling in just a few minutes. Josh Wiley from the Journalistic Revolution. He's got a lot of cool stuff coming down the pipe with documentaries and interviews and what have you. So really looking forward to speaking with him again. And anybody else that wants to call into the podcast, I know you guys are out there listening. I see the numbers. And I really appreciate the doctor calling in a couple of weeks ago. Had an incredible conversation. Once again, I'm not here to politically judge people, to politically have a banter with one of you. We need to get together. This is getting stupid. This is getting absolutely silly. That we got to go and get on opposite sides of the fence and then throw rocks at each other. I mean, come on. We're all adults here. Let's start acting like it. Call-in number is 602-753-1916. Welcome to planet Earth and welcome to humanity if you want to call in, and let's talk about how we can change things. So as we get going here, I do want to read an excerpt from this book that I'm reading, and I never got to it the other night. And it is entitled After the Welfare State. And it's really interesting because Jeffrey Moran of Harvard University says, your future depends on understanding what is in this book. And it is not a very thick book, and it's a compilation of articles that discuss what happens when we have a bloated welfare system. Now, the reason I bring this up is because this needs to be a debate as well. Can't get all the free goodies forever. We have to start teaching people how to be self-sufficient. We also can't collectivize everything. That'll collapse everything, as you'll hear here. Remember, this is not some new experiment here in America. This is not something brand new. This is not something that's never been tried before. The reason that historians get mad about the welfare state is because they know that it's used for leverage. And that's a big word you're going to hear Josh and I talk about when we do the New World Order for Dummies, is leverage. That is what these people utilize on a day-to-day basis and push for, is to have leverage. If you watch a good modern-day analogy, if you watch the show called, Boardwalk Empire, that entire show, even though they never mention the term, is all based on leverage. It's all about people having leverage over one another and utilizing the leverage to gain control and to gain things and to get things accomplished that they couldn't normally do on their own. So I got my friend Josh on the line here, so I'm going to read these. It's about a half a page, so everybody bear with me, but it will be an enlightening experience for everybody. So several important, and this talks about the decade of the 70s. So several important public, let me give you guys the title of the article before I completely botch this. It says, How the Welfare State Sank the Italian Dream by Persimello Fasalico. And it's F-A-S-A-S-C-O. F-A-L-A-S-C-A. Excuse me. So you guys can all look that up and pull up the article if you want to have a better understanding, but I will read you an excerpt from the article. Several important public policies in this period were adopted in the foundations for Italy's current crisis. The first was a weakening of fiscal discipline due to the 1966 Constitutional Court decision that loosely interpreted that a constitutional balanced budget constraint, the suspension of the constitutional limits allowed Parliament to pass laws, and the annual expenses were covered not by fiscal income by taxation, but by the issue of treasury bonds. Anybody following Americans' fiscal policy will probably cringe right now. And we'll go ahead and skip to the next paragraph. The second was an introduction of a generous pension system in 1969. The previous contribution-based mechanism was replaced with a distributive system, according to which the retirees received pensions that were not determined by the total amount of compulsory savings collected during their working years, but by merely their previous wages. So basically, they set to earn their wages, not by how much money they saved. A, quote, social pension for every citizen was established, a.k.a. Social Security. Along with a seniority criteria for the pensions, thus allowing workers to retire early, and a lax approach to the adopted to awarding disability pensions in southern Italy, which was considered a surrogate for more than an effective pro-growth, considered more of a surrogate than of effective pro-growth policies. Few paid attention to the issue of the financial stability. After all, the voters of the future do not vote today, a.k.a. the welfare goodies. The third was a heavier regulation on the labor markets through the adoption of the 1970 so-called worker statute, included in Article 18, which speculates that if the court finds an unjust dismissal of the employee of the firm for more than 15 employees with a long-term fixed contract, then the employee has the right to be reinstated. Skipping ahead again, and this is where everybody should have happy fun time. The force establishment through successive acts of 1968 and 1978, was a nationalized health care system that almost fully financed by taxes. Remember, Obamacare is taxation. It is not forcing you to buy something. Meaning that there was little incentive for consumers to economize the use of the medical services. And finally, in 1970, the government imposed compulsory rule that all employees of engineering and mental sectors, which sustainably regulated and limited working times. The long-running negative effects of those of the other policies obscured by in the short run by Italy's strong economic growth, and by the low age of the population. Generous pensions and health care expenses from small number of retirees were paid by large numbers of young workers, aka what happened in the baby boom generation. Years after those policies, along with even heavier regulations of the labor and services market, reduced productivity, made the labor market more rigid, dramatically raised the costs of hiring, and promoted an ever greater public expenditures and accumulation of state debt, in which turned around and absorbed an even greater share of private savings. So there you go, everybody. And once again, if you want to read the entire article, it is How the Welfare State Sank Italy, the Italian, excuse me, How the Welfare State Sank the Italian Dream by Permacilio Fasalica, F-A-L-A-S-C-A. So that's my reference for this evening. And once again, that is one of the debates that we need to have in America. Not about Obamacare, is it good, is it bad, what are we facing? So that being said, I am now pulling up my friend, and I guess, I don't know, Josh, what would you call me? My my guide to mental health, I guess?
I don't know. I guess that's a fairly descriptive way to put it. I don't know. I guess a fellow thinker.
A fellow traveler?
In an age of intellectual chaos, yeah.
That's probably a good point. In an age of intellectual chaos, we are fellow travelers on a windy road to absolute despotism, I guess.
I mean, I guess that's why you and I have radio shows like this, so we don't reach that point of despotic despair. But, you know, keep fighting the good fight, I guess. That was a terrifying article that you just read.
Well, I mean, it's not that people don't know this. It's just that I don't understand the philosophy behind the American public believing that, for whatever reason, that America is so different from everybody else, that things that happened in other countries could never happen here because this is America. What do you think that the what do you think that is? Is that just the disconnect, or is that something that they is like wishful thinking? What do you think?
You know, quite frankly, I think a large part of what that is kind of a part of and what distinguishes America from many European welfare states, mm-hmm. including the Italian example mm-hmm. of the mid-1970s, is that we have a twofold welfare system. We have a state welfare system, and we have a corporate welfare system. Mm-hmm. The state welfare system, of course, ups both of these kind of arms of tyranny up, as we saw in 2008, quite clearly, too big to fail, too big to jail phenomenon. But, mm-hmm. you know, we have this kind of implicit acceptance as Americans that if the government won't help you, then corporate America will help you. Mm-hmm. I can't help but see all of these ads on television, as little as I watch it, about Walmart's new employment push. Mm-hmm. And the big kicker is that they give you health care, right? So we have a welfare system that is comprised of both public and seemingly private entities. So it provides, again, what seems to be a larger security net, but once one of these arms fails, that's the nature of fascism, is that they're so intertwined mm-hmm. that this wide social net to catch everybody will eventually drop everyone as well.
And you caught me right in the middle of a sip, so that was good for radio. Nice little...
Happens to the best of us, man.
Absolutely, sorry. But, you know, Let's move on to some other breaking news. I'm just going to read you some headlines. And how about this one? This is a good one for you. Arming TSA officers meets resistance on the Hill. And it basically talks about how under the recent attack at LAX that now the TSA workers would like to have firearms, would like to also carry handcuffs, and be able to make arrests. So that's not the brown shirts or anything like that, I promise, but I can understand their fear and paranoia but I also have to use some history here. And anytime that you create a bodied force outside of you know, government control, you're basically creating a, wouldn't this be considered another arm of the federal government, and that would be armed going along with like the EPA and everybody else?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this is a trend that we're starting to see going forward. I'm really kind of hesitant to say that I believe that TSA agents themselves will be armed, because quite frankly, these are people that aren't trained in firearms. That's not their job description, right? They're just there to molest your children and give you a healthy dose of radiation before you get on the plane. Mm-hmm. What I can envision, however, is a system much like most of Europe has, where there are armed police at all of these security checkpoints and pacing up and down the terminals with large, fully automatic weapons, because, you know, everyone at the airport should be considered a potential threat, according to the terrorists that run our government. But I would be very surprised if TSA agents themselves had guns put in their hands. But again, an expansion of the already existing airport police force, that is certainly not outside the bounds of possibility, in my opinion.
And it really does beg the question, you know, if the TSA hasn't stopped a terrorist yet, even though they've claimed to stop, you know, over 50, but there's no documented cases of this happening. And they actually do more damage to the American psyche, as well as more damage to their pocketbooks by stealing, you know, iPads, cash, silver, you name it, out of their luggage. What purpose does this force serve? And I don't mean to bash the people that work there, because I'm not attacking you individually. I'm attacking the entity as a whole. And understand why we created the TSA. Well, we created the TSA because everybody was paranoid after 9/11, and we thought that we were going to get hit by terrorists every week. And it doesn't do us any favors that the government comes out and always hypes the fact that we're getting hit by these terrorist attacks, and that one guy goes nuts and shoots some people in an airport. Now we have to lock the airport down. We have to pull all this stuff in. I just don't understand how that works here in America, but yet the American people are perfectly fine with a Hellstorm missile going and blowing up an entire village to get one supposed bad guy, because that's freedom. I just don't understand the schizophrenic nature of that, because we have to say these things out loud, and I want you to say them out loud to yourself, audience. Think about what I just said. It is okay, let's all freak out because one employee got shot and killed, you know, doing his job by a lunatic who had who was mentally unstable and had thoughts of committing suicide. And typically that's what the television pushes us to do, is instead of committing suicide, just go and get shot up. It's very glorified. You know, you go there and you get a bunch of bullets in you, and then everybody stops and freaks out, and it's your one last hurrah. Instead of looking at it like that, we look at it from a perspective of they're keeping us safe, and the missiles that go and kill those little kids in the village keep us safe as well. What is it with the schizophrenic nature of America that doesn't let us discern from reality what is going on here, and how we're being indoctrinated to accept, number one, hands on your body, and number two, armed surveillance and everything everywhere?
Well, I think there's certainly a lot to what you just said. I'd like to make a bit of a distinction between yourself and the We Are Not Cattle media empire, and and the guests that you currently have on, in that you don't blame the individuals working for the TSA. But I think that the individuals working for the TSA, as much as individual police officers, as much as individual CIA agents, soldiers, or oncologists, these people are not your friends. They're giving you false cancer treatments sponsored by the Rockefeller Foundation, that treatments that kill you. They are putting hands on your children in places that no child should ever be touched. And again, they're murdering innocent people all around the globe. So, you know, these entities, despite the fact that they exist in a collectivized manner, they can't exist if people don't sign up. So it's the fault of every individual who works for the TSA for creating the TSA. It absolutely is. At least that's how I see it. But when you get back to the root of why these things are done in airports and why this kind of modality has been forced on the American psyche since 9/11, it's a form of promoting psychological instability in the wake of the largest snuff film ever to be broadcast over the airwaves. And that's what 9/11 was. It was a snuff film that you were all forced to watch, and it created post-traumatic stress disorder. So every time you go to the airport and these images and this feeling comes over you because it's so ingrained in your psyche, it puts you into a state of complacency. And it truly is a testing ground to see how far you are personally willing to literally bend over for these people. Will you hand your children over to them and let someone again, lay their hands on them? Will you, again, allow yourself to be doused in radiation, albeit a light dose, supposedly, to get on your airplane, to see your family for Thanksgiving? I know the holiday season's coming up, and a lot of your listeners, and maybe even yourself, are going to have to deal with this. So it truly is. It's a psychological test. It's a litmus test of the American people to see how much they will submit. And I just want to remind everyone out there that when you do fly, you can opt out of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You can opt out of the body scanners at the very least. They're going to lay their hands on you. There's not a whole lot you can do about that if you're going to use air as your primary means of transportation for the holiday season. I understand that that's how most people have to travel, especially long distances. But if you can take back what little dignity you have going through that airport checkpoint, do it by all means. Don't let these people put you through those machines.
And just to piggyback on what you said, when I flew down for, I made a sales trip for one of the companies I used to work for. They took the best sales reps and they flew us all down to Mexico and we had a big time and, you know, award dinners and stuff like that. And what happened was there were people going through the scanners, and I get up there and I say I opt out. And so I got pushed, you know, put off to the side until somebody could come help me. And my friend, as we were sitting at the, you know, I got the pat down and everything, and I looked at the guy when he came over to do it, and I said, I hope you don't enjoy this, man. You're violating almost every part of common law that has ever existed. And he's like, no, I don't like doing this, but I got to. And so, I mean, he was a cool enough guy. So we got to the gate, and my friends all asked me, like, what'd you do that for? How did you get over there? Why didn't you have to go through the scanners? I said, you don't have to go through the scanners. They're like, what? What do you mean we don't have to go through? Just because everybody else does it doesn't mean you have to do it. And that's how conditioned everybody was. It was just like, well, this is where the line goes. This is where I go. I go right through here. And not understanding the fact that they can opt out of the scanners and even opt out of the system itself, which is amazing. So anyway, I got one more article I wanted to touch on because we got about 10 minutes left here. So check this out, man. So it says, beware of the Fed's flu shots, says Michael Savage. And for anybody that doesn't know, Michael Savage is a conservative talk radio host. He's probably the second or third largest talk radio host in the United States, who also has he's also a doctor, by the way, and he has his degree in, good God, I cannot remember. I think it's something to do with, oh man, I cannot remember. He's got a doctorate, though, and here's what the article says, and this, I guess, was from his radio show. It says, don't get a flu shot, warns conservative talk radio host Michael Savage, because you can't trust the government. He says, did Harry Reid get a flu shot? Did Barack Obama get a flu shot? Did Barack Obama's lovely family take the flu shot? Did Joe Biden take one? He says, so far there has been no response and very suspicious. If the CDC is going to urge Americans to get vaccinated, the White House could at least say whether Sasha or Mia got their Mia. I don't even know her name. I don't really care. You just front people. The flu vaccine contains formaldehyde, known as a carcinogen, Savage said. It's totally true. Getting a flu shot might be the same as eating a FEMA trailer insulation, but if you're having formaldehyde injected into your body. He says the same with thimerosal, mercury-laced organic compound used as a preservative. It's not used as a preservative. It's just used to throw mercury in your body. I've already had this conversation before. Thimerosal has also been linked to some autism. Now the pro-flu lobby will tell you that it is negligible quantities of formaldehyde and thimerosal are in the vaccines are harmless and even for young children. I would remind you that the side effects are very rare, that you can't get the flu from getting vaccinated, and with the new combined shots, with the protection against both H1N1 and the seasonal flu, which are made the same way as the old flu shots. But says Dr. Savage, he's not a medical doctor, but he is a doctor. I think he's I can't remember. It has to do with the study of compounds or something. Suppose that you did get your flu shot in the past year. Did you get ALS or Alzheimer's disease or MS? Or did you watch one of your kids develop seizures? Did you watch your kid become autistic? God forbid, were you going to say that? Said you shouldn't have gotten the flu shot back in 2012. And that's what, unless you got Alzheimer's. So it is amazing to see people that used to call Josh, you and I, conspiracy theorists, because we wouldn't trust the government putting chemicals into our body, which we knew had properties that could give us side effects, but yet everybody says they're fine. I even have a friend of a friend that works at the CDC, and we got into this debate about flu shots 2 years ago, and they took the – it was Orwellian, Josh. You're going to love this. I asked them if they would vaccinate their kid, and if they knew that their kid would risk dying and just would they still vaccinate their kid if their kid died? And they said, yes, we would, because it's, you know, it helps the population. I said, well, if your kid gets vaccinated and my kid doesn't, your kid's already vaccinated against the disease, and they told me how it works, and I was like, okay, I understand the 90%. So they would actually vaccinate their kid and let their kid die just because it would be for the betterment of the earth. Now, what would you say to that, Mr. Eco-Science?
Obviously, I think they're disgusting human beings. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they are truly following Amtssprache, you know, the German official language, which was the result of, or not the result, the cause of so many of the awful atrocities of Nazi Germany. In that, you know, it was essentially the don't blame me, don't ask me questions, I'm just driving the trains kind of response. I don't know what the cargo is. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I don't know about you, but having very recently...
Hold on a second. I gotta close this window. I think the Drudge Report's killing your audio. All right, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, Drudge Report tends to do that sometimes with the auto-refresh, but...
Yeah, there we go. Much better. Go ahead.
Great, but I don't know about you, but I've been to the doctor somewhat recently, and on the back of the door in the office was essentially a bit of fear-mongering from the CDC about the necessity for vaccinations and how you're doing your part if you go and you get vaccinated or you get your children vaccinated. That's what it was specifically for, was getting your child vaccinated, someone who doesn't have the choice at that point, which is truly insidious. But, you know, it's interesting that Michael Savage is starting to talk about some of these things. And it's interesting that it's reaching kind of a common dialogue. I don't know if you remember back when it was an ovarian cancer vaccination. I forget the exact name of it.
Oh, I got you. Gardasil.
Gardasil. Yeah, Gardasil. That was it. Yeah, and killed a great number of people. I actually had a friend growing up in high school whose father said he was a pharmaceutical rep for Pfizer, and he said he would not let his daughters get the Gardasil vaccine because all these clinical trials were coming up with people dead, and they weren't publishing this information.
Oh, imagine that. Come on.
Oh, I know, right? So once this information kind of starts to bubble to the surface, we can really get a more comprehensive understanding of how dangerous these things truly are. And if you really want to get into the grammar, in the trivium sense, the understanding of what's really going on, look at the people mm-hmm. who are funding these movements. It's people like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller mm-hmm. Foundation, the Ford mm-hmm. Foundation, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and I use that phrase very, very lightly.
Oh, come on.
But what these people are eugenicists. And this sounds nuts, because eugenics is certainly a pseudoscience. Most of humanity has known this is a pseudoscience at least since the days of Nazi Germany. But, you know, we also have to realize that Hitler took most of his cues from America. The mm-hmm. reason we don't read Mein Kampf in our history classes in America is to get a true understanding.
Don't talk about the 100 pages in there where it talks about how the U.S. is the most German nation on the planet.
Oh, yeah. Well, and half of Mein Kampf is essentially a love letter to the Ford family. And to the model of corporatization and the model of eugenics. So to think that these things kind of stopped in America after the end of the Nazi Empire.
You mean after we brought over the 10,000 scientists and all that and said, show us what the hell you guys did, that was awesome?
Exactly. Even barring Project Paperclip, even barring the fact that, you know, the prolific work of a researcher by the name of Anthony Sutton, who wrote a series on Wall Street and the rise of Bolshevism, mm-hmm. the rise of FDR, and the one that I'm really talking about is the rise of Hitler, mm-hmm. we start to see this pattern emerge where this very elite class funds incredibly amoral, immoral, heinous things simply to garner knowledge and leverage over the average man. Now, whether that be financial, institutional, or medical in this instance, they really don't seem to care too much about the average Joe on the street. So I just really like people to kind of look into the history of that and to look into mm-hmm. the history of eugenics specifically. Mm-hmm. There's a great documentary called Maafa 21, M-A-A-F-A, and the number 21. That's on YouTube, but it's essentially about the history of eugenics on the African American population specifically, and how none of these things really ended. They just simply shifted from a form of hard eugenics, which is the
soft
the
kill over- eugenics.
Exactly, to soft eugenics, and the big distinction is hard eugenics is killing these people outright, and soft eugenics is either preventing them from reproducing or giving them such horrible, disfiguring kind of mental or physical disabilities that no one would want to reproduce with them anyways. So
yeah, it's nuts, dude. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, finish your thoughts.
It's all nuts. I just wanted to say I'm really glad that you brought that up tonight. I think it's a huge issue and I'm glad Michael Savage is bringing it up, despite the fact that I don't have a lot of love for conservative talk radio anymore. But I'm glad that these issues are kind of starting to break into the public nexus. We really need to have a national dialogue about all this stuff.
Well, absolutely, and I have no problem with the idea of vaccination. I do have a problem with Bill and Melinda Gates going over to India and giving 40,000 kids polio. Oh, I'm sorry. You must have got a bad batch. We're so sorry about that. So,
exactly, yeah.
And I'm not meaning to be – it's gallows humor, people, because it's really, really terrifying what's going on. And like I said, I have no problem against vaccinations if we could do clean vaccines. But just think about what Michael Savage says. Think about how many of these people, quote-unquote, in high levels of authority do not take vaccines. But yet, everywhere you turn, hey – get 20% off your purchase, and you get the flu shot, get 20% off your purchase. So
GMO either.
No, hell no. That's for the slaves. So anyway, thank you so much to Josh Wiley for joining me tonight. Remember, everybody, tune in about an hour over on libertymovementradio.com. Yours truly will be there for about a half an hour. I think Josh will be coming up after that. I might stay on the entire time while Josh is there just so we can horse around. So thanks for joining me, everybody. Remember, get a friend, get informed, get involved. Follow me on Twitter, wearenotcattle.net. Put up some new content. Check it out. Thanks, everybody, for listening.